5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to your daily dose of facts to fight off the liberal gaslighting.
You can be in the middle of a hurricane.
You have sanctuary in the city of Chicago.
Or you can be on a calm day. North is still north. You could be in a thunderstorm.
I am angry. We are not going back. Not ever.
North is still north. People can yell at me.
The hell with the Supreme Court. We will defy them.
North is still north. It doesn't change fundamental things. And in this business, right is still right, even if you stand by yourself.
We don't get fooled again. No, no.
Live across the fruited plain and from sea to shining sea, we're converting the Marxist left 1 hour at a time on the Wendy Bell radio program.
Hey!
It is a delight and honor, as always, to be with you now in hour three of the Wendy Bell radio program, your home for common sense conservatism. I saw a podcast, watched a podcast with Loy Brunson about a week ago, kind of fell in love with the guy. He's like we are, you know, a hardworking, honest, tax-paying lover of America who, along with two brothers, has done something truly outstanding. And it's to have a case go all the way up to the Supreme Court that has grave implications for our elections, not just of the past, but of the future. And it is my great honor to say to you, hello to Loy Brunson. Welcome to the program, sir. I'm so happy to hear your voice. And that is where we don't hear Loy Brunson. There we go. Hi, Loy.
Hello there.
Welcome, welcome, sir. You know what? When I saw this great podcast you were on, and I was like, I've got to get this guy. And you've been so cool to go back and forth with me via text message. And what I like to do, if I do one thing well, it's to listen. And so what I'd like to do is just open the floor and say, hey, tell everybody what you've been doing for these last 2 years and why it's so damn big. So take it away.
Oh, gosh. Okay, we're on right now then.
You are, babe.
Okay. Well, I have a brother, and he got excited about studying law. He's always wanted to do it, never went to school, never went to law school. But he had some properties that were affected by the subprime mortgage bundling, and so he decided he wanted to start suing banks because he thought it was corrupt. And so he studied and studied and studied, and he ended up litigating in state and federal court, and actually two petitions to the United States Supreme Court. So over a period of several years, he had some wins, and he really got into the procedure. He told me, he says, I'm learning procedure, and I'm seeing that the attorneys and the courts are not following their own procedures. So he says, that's my focus. So when he watched the electoral vote being certified, he watched the whole thing, as a lot of us did, and he was pretty upset. And so he called me on the phone. He says, hey, I think we can sue these guys. I think we can sue and go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court for what they did.
And so I'm going to stop you right there and say, what did your brother see on January 6th of 2021, that certification that struck him as being something that is actionable, Loy?
They didn't investigate. When you go to a police station and you say, hey, a crime's been committed, and if they don't investigate, they've just committed a felony. Hmm. They've just committed a crime. So when you have 100 members of Congress that not only were witnesses that crimes had been committed, and they had a mountain of evidence that they produced, and they won't pause for 10 days. So when Senator Mike Lee stood up and says, hey, I just need to move forward with this. I've taken an oath, and I've got to just certify the vote from the states, and that's it. And then Ted Cruz has a different opinion. He's saying, no, we need to take a 10-day pause. Well, Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley and about 98 others were correct because they should have taken a 10-day pause. And by not doing that, they were breaching our national security. They were violating their oath of office. And so the complaint asks that every one of those people responsible for this major national security breach be removed from public office and placed where they can't do it again, and that is they are barred from holding public office the rest of their lives, right down to the local level in the United States. So,
how did you go about, and I know that I've paid some attention to what you've been talking about, and there's a national emergency clause that you wove into this. Tell everybody about how you proceeded to get this in the hands of the Supreme Court and how it came to be that they would agree to hear this case, because that had to just floor you in some capacity.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Well, I was the plaintiff in the first case, which is still alive in federal court. And we have another brother that's just super smart and super ambitious. And he said, hey, I want to do one, too. And it's like, well, two cases are better than one. So his is identical to mine. We were able to really get some bugs out of mine with my Fourth Amendment complaint that was filed. Finally, it took, you know, three amended complaints to do it. And so he took the perfected version with our, you know, together we did it as a team. And he filed his complaint in state court. And the U.S. attorneys came on board and they removed it to federal court. And we fought that in federal court. And we're at the time, we're thinking, just get it done. Just dismiss this. Just get it tossed. Just get it tossed quickly so we can take it up to the next level, to the 10th Circuit. So, yeah, so they adjudicated it, made a decision, dismissed it. It's like, hooray, we wanted you to dismiss it because we want to take this to the Supreme Court. So we go to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, and the U.S. attorneys file a motion to dismiss. We file an opposition. They file a reply, and we also file a notice for decision to get the court to get off their butts and make a decision. The three judges there at the 10th Circuit, they have three that decide, and they sit on it. They sit on it for 2, 3, 4 months, and so it's like 4 months. We got together, and it's like, hey, this isn't going, we got to do something here. My brother, the legal guy, says, no, I know rules of civil procedure, federal rules, and you cannot move past the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals until they make a decision. It's stuck there until they do that. And so my brother and I says, hey, there has to be a way to get around this. There has to be a way, because this is important. You know, the whole country's, you know, going to be affected by this. So he says, well, I'll see what I can do. So a couple days later, he called me on the phone and says, I got it. There's a Supreme Court Rule 11 that allows you to file, if they decide once they get it, if they decide that it's a national emergency level, we can file what we call a petition for writ of certiorari under this court's Rule 11. So on the face of the cover, and we have to perfect bind these things. I mean, the court's really strict about how you produce, how you get, you know, how you print the petitions. So, okay, so we have this Rule 11 petition. And we get it all perfect bound, and we send it off with a prayer, and we're just waiting to see what happens, to see if they're just going to send it back and say, no, this isn't a national emergency. It's just another, you know, ridiculous case. Get it, you know, get a decision from the 10th Circuit and then see us about it, mm-hmm. basically, to simplify it. So 5 days later, my brother receives a phone call from the clerk's office of the Supreme Court. And it was the clerk of the Supreme Court is not a clerk of the justice. It's not. No, the clerk of the whole court for 11 years was the attorney for the United States Supreme Court. I think his name is Scott Sessions Harris. And so now he is the clerk. He is the gatekeeper with a staff. And one of his staff, a case analyst, calls my brother and says, we've received your Rule 11 petition and we've decided to accept it. And we would like you to add some more content that's not required. But we understood later why they wanted to add this. Very strategic. It's just incredible that she had us do that. So we go ahead and add it. And then she says, and how soon can you get this to us? And my brother says, well, we'll get it as soon as we can. And she emphasized that. Get this, get going on this, get it to us as soon as you can. I says, okay, we will. So we put that all together. We get it. We're almost taking it, we're ready to get it. We had to reformat, restructure it. You know, it changes everything in it. And so we've got it all prepared. It's all printed. We're taking it to binders, and they're just about to bind it. And we get a notice from the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals saying that they had made a decision. It's like, so after 4 months, they're going to make a decision. So we're thinking they got some word about this Rule 11 that we were going around them, and they didn't want to be guilty of just doing nothing. That's what we're thinking.
Right.
So they make this decision. So my brother says, okay, call the court. So my brother calls the clerk. He has a direct number with this case analyst. There's no waiting. There's no someone that, you know, that person answers the phone. And so he explains to her that we noticed by the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals that they made a decision. So what do we do now? Do we just take it? Can we just leave it in so we don't have to, so we can speed it up and not go through the all this hassle of reformatting and printing and binding, all that stuff? And she says, no, you need to take it out. We don't need it. Just take it out. And there you make sure you don't forget to put what we asked in there. Okay, make sure you do that. And now, how soon are you going to get it to us? It's like, again, how soon are you going to get it to us? So my brother says, well, I think we can have it to you in 2 weeks. And she says, well, can you get it to us sooner than 2 weeks? And it's like, whoa, the court's asking us to. It was just shocking. So he says, we will do what we can, see how soon we can get it. So he gets off the phone. He's freaking out. It's like they want it soon. So this is good news. So he works with the printers and the binders, and they put it on the fast track. So we get it a week earlier to them. So on October 20th, we overnighted U.S. mail. On the 21st, they received it. That's a Friday. We sent it on Thursday. They received it Friday. The 24th, on Monday, they docket it, and they show it filed as the file date as the date we sent it, which is the 20th. So they received it the 24th, and they filed it as the 20th. Okay, so then they also notice the U.S. attorneys representing the 388 defendants that they have until the 23rd of November to oppose it. They have one shot, just one shot to oppose it. They file an opposition, and that's it. And then it goes to conference. So it's like, okay, it's a waiting game, but it's not too bad, about 30 days. So 23rd of November rolls around, the day before Thanksgiving. Nothing has happened. Nothing. We haven't received. Oh, they also asked my brother to send a waiver document to the U.S. attorneys, giving them an opportunity to waive their right to oppose. And so we've heard nothing. They didn't file a waiver. And then just hours before the deadline, the docket shows that the U.S. attorneys are no longer representing the 388 defendants. They have a new attorney of record, and she's her name is Elizabeth Preloader, and she is the United States Solicitor General, and the term is she makes an appearance. In other words, she appears as the attorney for the defendants. And with that appearance, she also files a waiver. Signs a waiver waiving her defendant's right to oppose this petition before conference.
This
is freaking us out.
Oh my gosh, I can't even. Here's what I got to do though. I got to put you on a brief pause here. Loy, hang tight. Hang tight. Don't lose your enthusiasm. This is a cliffhanger, ladies and gentlemen, okay? Wait until you hear what happens next and what is involved here, okay? Quickly, I want to tell you about this COVIDtaxrelief.org. We've had these guys on the show. If you stayed open with your small business during COVID, right? And even if you made money, even if you lost money, if you stayed open and had at least two employees, did you know that you could be the recipient of up to $26,000 per employee? It's part of the COVID CARES Act money. It's a provision in there that COVIDtaxrelief.org, the attorneys, the CPAs there, know how to connect you with. How do you find out if you could be eligible for any of this relief money? It's very basic. You go to COVIDtaxrelief.org, you enter your information, they get in touch with you. The process is very straightforward. You pay nothing up front. They'll take a percentage. If they get you money, they'll take a percentage of what they get, of what you get. But without them, you'd never know. COVIDtaxrelief.org. The success stories we've been hearing are phenomenal. COVIDtaxrelief.org. Okay, don't go anywhere. Loy, he's going to finish his story. Well, he's going to keep going because I've got a full 40 minutes left. I'll hear it, the whole thing. Don't go anywhere. More with Loy Brunson in his case before the Supreme Court regarding 2020 next on the Wendy Bell Radio Program. All right, I'm wasting no time. Loy Brunson, he's got a case before the Supreme Court that has implications for 2020 and beyond. Loy, pick it up. Okay, so the last time we talked, you said the Supreme Court, the clerk had said, hey, make sure you make these changes and get this to us fast. Take it away.
Yeah, they were more additions than changes.
Ah, gotcha.
So that was interesting. Yeah, so let's see, where are we at? We're at the waiver. Okay, so the day that it's due, just hours from the deadline, the attorney representing the 388 defendants, which include the president, the vice president, and 385 sitting members of the U.S. House and U.S. Senate, she files a signed waiver waiving their right to oppose this petition before it goes into conference. So we're pretty happy about that. We feel like that's an answer of prayers.
Sure.
So now she all when that happens, a few days go by, and then we notice the docket reflects a conference date. That where conferences where the nine justices go in by themselves, no representation from either side. They go in just with themselves and with our petition, okay, and whatever other documents they might have gotten from the docket, you know, the lower court's docket, whatever. So they go in there and they discuss this and they say to themselves, should we move this forward to a full hearing? And the hearing would be where the litigants come in, the representatives of both sides come in and argue in front of the justices. The justices give them questions, they give answers, the judges make statements, and then they make a decision right there, you know, 5-4, and it's adjudicated, right? And so so here we are at a conference date reflecting January 6th for conference. It's like, are you kidding me? January 6th. Okay, they hold conferences on Fridays usually. Uh-huh. And it just so happens that that January 6th is on a Friday. Oh. And so it's a conference date. So we felt like that was kind of another sign from heaven. Because it's a two-year anniversary, right, of what we're suing about.
Right.
So if you go to supremecourt.gov, you can also go to 7discoveries.com, and you can see we keep a real-time, you know, information there, so you can see all the cases. We actually sued two federal courts for blocking my case, okay? And they gave in after we took the federal court of Utah and the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. We sued them. They were the two defendants. We took them to state court, and after that was the dust settled off of that. They filed my case, didn't just unblock it. They filed it and ordered the clerk to issue 388 summonses, which we did about 24 hours after they ordered it filed. So that's still alive. So we've gotten a lot of positive stuff, you know, response from the courts. We're pretty excited about it. So there it is, January 6th, 2023. And let me just remind people, the listeners, of the power of this case. This is the most power the Supreme Court has ever been given. They, because of their rules and it being a national emergency and because of the complaint that's connected to this petition, they can go right into the complaint and they can satisfy the reliefs and they can remove from office every single defendant. Mike Pence wouldn't be because he's not there, but the 387 defendants removed from office. Not only removed from office, but they can bar them from holding office ever again. They should be barred. They were a national security breach. They participated in it. If you have a security person and he goofs up one time, that's one time too many. You know, you can't have a gate working, then one time it's not, and then, you know, then the enemies come in. So the Supreme Court justices now have the power to remove every single one of the defendants, which include Republicans and Democrats, mm-hmm. and bar them from holding office ever again, federal, state, local, within the United States, amongst other things that they can do to them. Now, so they have that power to do this.
Now, I have to ask you this. Do you have 5 more minutes to hang through the bottom of the
sure.
hour break? Because I don't want to go by all the signs that you've gotten from this. And I want to talk to you about some of these tweaks that the clerk had asked you to make and what this means.
Sure.
It's not about replacing Joe Biden per se or relitigating that. It's
no.
about protecting what's coming in the future. I love this. Loy Brunson, hang tight with me. Ladies and gentlemen, this is hugely important. And he's going to connect the dots for the rest of the story a month from tomorrow, this is potentially bombshell. And three brothers who love America, who believe in this country, have done something special. Remember when I said, what's your hill today? This has been theirs for the last 2 years. More with Loy Brunson after this on the Wendy Bell Radio program. Don't miss it. Welcome back to the Wendy Bell Radio program. Think about how many cases are limited before they're even docketed at the Supreme Court. It's got to be thousands, multiple thousands every single year. And joining us live on the program now to continue his story is Loy Brunson, who with his brothers has a case that's been accepted by the Supreme Court. And it's a case about congressional treason, possibly. Loy, I want to ask you, tell me about what the, if you can, and I don't want to push any buttons here, but what was it that the Supreme Court reached out to you and asked you to modify in your original filing? What did they need that would have, and why do you suppose they did that?
Well, yeah, we speculate, but it looks to me, it looks to us like when the attorneys representing the defendants have this opportunity to file an opposition, it has to be printed. They can't just slap something together and email it, okay? They have to have it printed and perfect bound, 45 copies, you know, five for each justice and, you know, copies to us. And so it's a bit of work, but it's strange that they waited so long, and then, you know, it should have been way before the deadline that the Solicitor General took over. So we don't know why it happened the day of the deadline, okay? So it's just, yeah, we're just still scratching our heads, like, what just happened for them to file the waiver? Because they could have filed an extension. Okay, so you want to know what was in that prior to that. And that's, they asked us to include the motion to dismiss. And that would probably cover a lot of what they would put in their opposition. And but the fact that we put that in the petition, they received copies, you know, 30 days before the deadline, so they could see what we had. Mm-hmm. So, but we put the motion to dismiss, and we also put our opposition to the motion to dismiss in there.
Got it.
From the complaint. So they wanted to have that at conference that they could refer to. So it actually, in a way, if they were lazy or if they couldn't afford it normally, it's like, hey, they've got the, you know, they did us a favor by putting the motion to dismiss
right
in there. So
how about the timing? Why did they want it expedited, do you suppose?
Because it is a national emergency. They had already characterized it as a Rule 11 petition. They had already told us by accepting our Rule 11 position, they were basically telling us that they looked at this as a national emergency. Otherwise, they wouldn't accept it. Otherwise, they would have just said, no, go wait for the 10th Circuit to make a decision. They haven't made a decision yet.
So at this rate, a week or a month from tomorrow, are you waiting for more correspondence from the High Court before you guys have to go and argue the case before them? Or is that on hold? How does that work?
Well, if you file the standard procedure, what happens is once it makes it through conference, then they give a date for a hearing.
Okay.
And you file an opening brief, and you get all your ducks in a row so that you can go argue in front of the justices. But remember, there are special conditions and abilities that they have under Rule 11. They can completely adjudicate the whole complaint. Normally, you go to the Supreme Court, and it's they uphold a decision or they overturn a decision, right? Well, under Rule 11, they can adjudicate, they can judge and execute the whole complaint that the petition is connected to. So if you go to 7discoveries.com, you can download the complaint that is the foundation of the petition. Now, you can't download the petition from our website, but you can make a donation and receive the hard copy exactly with the court stamps,
ooh,
exactly what the justices will have in front of them. You can do that. But you can also go to supremecourt.gov and do a docket search. Don't do a general search. Do a docket search with 22-380, and you can see the petition, but you can't see the complaint that the petition is connected to.
So
you'd have to go 7discoveries.com for that.
What is the worst case scenario that could happen?
The worst case scenario is that let's say they were nine judges that didn't love the Constitution and hated any thought of taking their immunity from them. You know what they would do? They would vote it moves forward so they could crush it in the hearing, so that it would become legal authority in the Supreme Court decision, so cases like ours would never make it, you know,
to the light.
Because
we got
a Supreme Court decision.
Right. You don't feel that way.
No, we feel like it could very well be a 9-0 vote, because if the three justices that we think could be negative about this, they would be told this is about about honesty and about upholding the Constitution. It has nothing to do with merits or fraud or actions taken by members of Congress. It's just about securing the election. And it's like, well, let's say the Democrats had lost. Wouldn't they want an investigation? So it benefits them too. And so I tell people, I say, hey, go to your neighbors that are Democrats and say, finally, there's something we can both agree on. Regardless of political persuasion, this case will make your representatives honest. You want your Democrat representatives to be honest? This will do it.
I agree. Now, best case scenario, pie in the sky, you guys get a home run.
Best case scenario is between now and the time Congress goes back into session, the court orders the U.S. Marshals Service, and the court ordered the U.S. Marshals Service to serve my complaint to Nancy Pelosi and about 80 others. So they would be the law enforcement part of this, I think. They would, the U.S. Marshals with the court order would go to the sergeant at arms and showing a list of people that need to have their credentials canceled. If the sergeant at arms hesitates or doesn't do it, he goes to jail. That'd be a felony. You can't, you know, contempt of court. And so he would cancel the credentials of the 385 members of Congress, and the same thing would happen with canceling the credentials of the president and vice president. I picture a Secret Service team showing up, supervisors showing up with U.S. Marshals or whatever, and relieving the duties of the assignments of the Secret Service for the president and the vice president. They would just be left standing there, and they would, and then we would have a new president. It could be the sitting president that was in place before all this stuff happened, or it could be the Speaker of the House, whoever that might be. And then I could also see a smooth transition with the media where we could have special teams, government teams that go in. The Federal Communications Commission directors are presidentially appointed, so they could be temporarily removed and staff replacing them. The major broadcasting houses could be replaced with temporary government teams, so you'd have a commercial break, the commercial ends, comes on, you see new faces, government officials reporting the news in real time so people could verify with their own eyes and experiences that now they're getting the truth. So that's the best case scenario and other things related to that. But mainly, and then the oath being binding. It's like now we have a constitution that has an oath that's binding, protecting us and the constitution. So then you would have politicians that are criminally minded that wouldn't even think of running for office because they would be held accountable because now their immunity is stripped. Now we have a binding oath as prescribed in Article 6 of our constitution.
Huh. It's fascinating. How long have you been working on this?
A couple of years, but the constitutional part of it is mine. I've been working on it for quite a few years. I've published some books, and there's a constitution book. It's 7 discoveries everyone should know in the U.S. Constitution and some other stuff. So it's a pocket-sized book that has Q&A and has these concepts about how the oath needs to be enforceable and things like that people might want to get with a donation.
And for folks who are listening, among these 380-plus members of Congress, who are we talking about? Because big names that we all talk about every day.
Well, Republicans and Democrats. Yeah. Nancy Pelosi. Pelosi is a, you know, Tom Scott is a defendant. Mike Lee is a defendant. Mitt Romney's a defendant. Our representatives, the only representatives that are not defendants, are Burgess Owens and Chris Stewart. So Ted Cruz is not a defendant. Josh Hawley's not a defendant. So there are a lot of defendants.
Yeah,
all the defendants. Go to 7discoveries.com. You can see all the defendants.
Yeah, I think a better question to you would be, who were the members of Congress that were speaking up in light of the evidence of election chicanery, who wanted this 10-day pause and called for it? Who were some of the names other than Hawley, other than Cruz? Who else?
You know, I just mentioned a couple from my state. I'd have to go to 7discoveries.com and look at the list again. There's so much going on.
You don't know everything right now?
So it's not a personal thing. It's just those who did what they did. It's I don't have a personal vendetta against any of them.
No, I get it. I'm very hopeful. You know, we haven't had a whole lot go the way a patriot-minded, love America way in a while. And I think you can imagine that a lot of Americans are on your side.
Yes, we're getting a lot of feedback. And I tell people, go to 7discoveries and just make a $1 donation. Just go to 7discoveries.com, make a $1 donation. That'll let us know that you're out there, that you're listening, that you're praying for this case to move forward like it has. And that'll be a huge boost. So we're getting some tremendous support from people and their prayers. We appreciate you.
Well, we appreciate you and your brother so much from Utah, yes?
Yes.
Well, I think it's outstanding. Thank you very much, Loy Brunson. Would you please come back when you've got news to share? Because I would love to have
you. Absolutely. Yes, and check in anytime you want. And check the docket, and you'll see at 7discoveries.com, you'll see all the happenings in real time. And then if you want to talk about it, I'd love to come back on.
I love that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Loy. Godspeed to you and your family, Patriots through and through. Love to have you. Oh, my. Brock, what do you think? I think it's really interesting to hear. And I should have asked him. Should have said, you know, having you represent yourself is a different optic, I believe, to the high court than when you have one of these high-powered attorneys on your side.
I think it's interesting, and I think I hope that some media pays attention to this. I hope in some way it just gets people the idea of saying, yes, I can do something.
And it's not okay anymore to use the excuse, there was no proof of election fraud, because when you haven't looked at the evidence, that doesn't equal no proof. It means no desire to see the truth, no desire to have a conversation. And that goes back to where we are with the town square. Why Twitter and Elon Musk owning it is so dang important.
I think this is going to, between Twitter and this, it makes them... I think Twitter only enhances this and brings it more to the forefront.
I agree.
Because look at all the things we're finding out behind the scenes. Now you have the Supreme Court saying, like he said, we're bringing, what was it, Article 11?
Yes. Or
it's forward. They're saying, we think this is an emergency. So hopefully that makes a difference. Hopefully they see it and say, we have to have this discussion.
And as a sidebar, I know many of you were paying attention to this program last week when we had True the Vote's co-founder Greg Phillips on. And he was specifically talking about proof of interference from China in our elections in my state, in Pennsylvania, in my county. He said this is an epicenter of election malfeasance. And I will tell you that we do have a team of people working in concert with the DA's office in LA. And I hope to be able to share some information with you soon to confirm that there is proof that our suspicions are correct. There can't be tens of millions of us who know it was all wrong, who ourselves are wrong. It's just, that's not how it works. And I know you know that. Great opportunity for me to thank my friend, Tom Yakupin from West Penn Life and Health. You know, he talks about the safe money annuity. It is a 5-year program, 60 months. And if you have $100,000 or more, maybe in an IRA or a 401k or a low interest bearing CD, and you'd like to move it over to something that's a little bit more stable, that grows your nest egg predictably, that gives you peace of mind, 4.5%. That's pretty great. Locked in, totally fixed, 60 months, the safe money annuity. If you have less than that, but at least $25,000, you can have 4.3% interest guaranteed. Tom is a great guy. We trust him implicitly. I would not talk about him or his business here if he wasn't. 724-228-7187. 724-228-7187. WestPennLife.com. Quick time out. We're wrapping it up in a bow. Right after this on the Wendy Bell Radio program. So now it's time to connect the dots of today's program. What is the hill for you? What is the line in the sand for you? Where will you put the flag and fight to the end? I shared with you this story of the SEC championship game and how quickly the response of the people at that football game at the Mercedes-Benz Arena or what have you in Atlanta, when they felt that the halftime performance of the two young ladies vying for $100,000 in tuition from Dr. Pepper, who were throwing footballs into a big can, when they tied not just once but twice, and then according to Dr. Pepper's own rules, they gave the money away to the gal who had, in the preliminary round the day before, scored more goals or more, you know, touchdown throws than the other. Well, nobody really knew that those were the game plans, that was the rules of the game. in the arena. And so when they handed the $100,000 to the one gal over the other, everybody thought the one was gypped. And they went crazy and hashtags started flying. And they were saying, you know, buzz Dr. Pepper. And the Dr. Pepper officials obviously read the room, and within 20 to 30 minutes, they were able to say, holy moly, we need to make this right. And so they came out before the fourth period, quarter, whatever, and they said, we're going to give the second gal the scholarship too. So each of them got $100,000. Things can happen that quickly if enough people respond. Let's take Apple. Apple accelerates plan to shift production out of China. This is from Zero Hedge this morning. According to the Wall Street Journal, citing insiders, Apple is pushing the accelerator on getting the hell out of China. Why? Well, because things are absolutely barbaric when you live in tyranny. When Apple and its largest plant has workers there who are literally, if one person tests positive for COVID, because that makes sense to shut down an entire factory, are quite literally locked in the facility with filth and garbage just flowing out of the place until there's no more COVID cases. I mean, does that make any kind of logical sense? Or is that the logical next step of what this cabal here in the United States believes it can use to control you? Lock you up in your house? Well, how far of a stretch is that from what we've been through? They kicked you out of your job. They took your kids out of school. They might have ruined your business. Apple is reportedly telling suppliers to actively plan on assembling Apple products elsewhere in Asia, primarily India or Vietnam, as the company looks to reduce dependence on Taiwanese assemblers spearheaded by Foxconn. The company's goal is to ship 40 to 45% of iPhones from India versus the current single-digit percentage, according to folks quoted in this story. Enough people saw enough crap. They've heard enough stories of enough human rights abuses, sex trafficking, slave labor of Uyghur Muslims. I mean, what more do we need to talk about? Not to mention China's ridiculous influence here in the United States and its effect on Joe Biden and on our Congress. Enough people obviously saying, I don't want your stupid phone, where the optics for Apple seemingly bad enough. They're in serious backlog order. They're going to lose hand over fist how many tens of billions of dollars making a change. So that leads us to what? Are you Lloyd Brunson? Is there something in your wheelhouse? Are you James Woods? Are you that one person today? What's going on where you live? What's happening at your children's schools? What are you willing to fight to the end to make right? And when you weigh that against what they've already taken from you, oftentimes the decision is very clear. I don't want to be that gentleman in Arizona who rolled over when the Secretary of State's office muscled him and said, we will arrest you if you don't certify this election. I would have told Katie Hobbs to suck it. Try me. Arrest me. Throw me in prison. I can't wait for the world to see how corrupt and dirty and dark your little cabal is. Try me. More people need to do that. And that is what James Woods said in his interview with Fox News. I am just one person who's been silenced, who's been deplatformed, who's lost jobs, who's lost his career, a career that he loved, merely because of his views. Now, if all the other thousands of people join together and rise up, that's how you take a stand. That's how you make change. That's how you make it to the Supreme Court. That's how you expose the darkness. Food for thought. Love being with you guys. Thank you. 7discoveries.com. 7discoveries.com. You can spell it out. Use the number. Either way gets you to the end result. A buck would certainly help Lloyd Brunson. Until tomorrow, everybody. Thanks for being here. Peace.